I think maybe one of the things to bring up as well of the, there's the kind of spiritual ideals and the sort of lofty goals that we talk about, but I think as practitioners, it's important to recognize our limitations and also give ourselves permission to make mistakes. You know, even say the having this quite worthy goal of kind of Tudong and practicing simplicity and relinquishment and renunciation and all these wholesome qualities, it's still, I think it's helpful to recollect some of the kind of struggles that are inherent or natural. I think of Ajahn Chah, who's he's such a widely respected, revered teacher, but he's also one of the things that also attracted me to him was that he also seemed very human. Yeah. And I remember one time him talking about his first Tudong experience, and his when he ordained he was a village monk studying, and lived for quite a few years without doing very much meditation at all, and that's quite the norm in Thailand. And then he decided, no, I'm going to cut everything. I'm going to leave the village monastery. I'm going to leave my home village. I'm going to go off wandering, seeking this experience of meditation and seeking liberation, as is in the scriptures. Since rather than studying about it, maybe I'll just do it. And remember him saying that he and a friend of his, a fellow monk, were sort of decided they're going to go off wandering, and then they start preparing, and then of course there's the thought of, what if this, what if that, and what if this happens, what if that happens, and he said by the time they left, their stuff was so heavy. He even took along one of these stone pestles to, for pounding up food, just in case. carrying this stone mortar and pestle along with him, and on this simplicity, this quest for simplicity, so that that happens. There's the one mind is going on in one direction, and the other mind is going in another direction. And unfortunately, they're the same mind. that's what happens. So just that, he learned from that, it's something he grew from until he became a great teacher. It wasn't a huge obstacle. And he talks about the period when he was doing a lot of his Tudong was during the Second World War and after the Second World War, and that was a period of the northeast of Thailand has always been poor. It's always been a lot of hardship just to get by, but during that period there was just real shortages of everything, and so just as requisites and robes were falling apart, and And he said he was just constantly patching his robe, trying to keep it together, and plotting of how to get new robes, you know, sort of the mind obsessing, how to get something. And one of the things that he did, that he held to as a kind of a resolution, was that he made this resolution that he would never ask for anything, even if somebody made an invitation, that he wouldn't ask for anything, so that you know, again, sort of these two minds, the mind of simplicity and resolution, I'm not going to ask for anything, and the other mind plotting of how to get cloth, plotting in his mind how he was going to sew it to get it just right, and he's sort of obsessing, you know? And that's the nature of the mind, sort of seeing how we can obsess, how we can get caught up in something, and then even when you get what you want, is it actually satisfactory? He said. Finally, as he was at a monastery, and this Ajahn Kinnerly, who I had mentioned, noticed that his robes were just really short. And so Ajahn Kinnerly mentioned to his relatives or lay supporters this monk was he is very sincere, a good practitioner, but his robes were really short. So his relatives got some of the village cloth that is sort of hand woven. From the cotton from their fields, but it's quite coarse and quite thick. So then Ajahn Chah said, and by the time he sewed it on, he was so excited, he was so happy, and then sewed it, because we sew all of our robes by ourselves, and in those days sewing machines weren't around, so it was hand sewn. And he got his robes, and there's this outer robe, and then there's a double thickness robe, and there's the under robe, and it was all this thick cotton. And then when it's dyed, the dye that we use in the forest tradition is a dye that we make ourselves also, using the heartwood of the jackfruit tree. And you take the heartwood and you chop it up into chips, and you boil it, and then you... the color comes out, and then you concentrate it, and then you dye the robes. And he said he was really keen to get a good color, so the dye was kind of thick, and he got the thick robes. And he said, by the time he put them on, it was just so hard to put them on. And he said he was like going on alms round. He was like this walking pot. It was these stiff robes, really thick. He said it took over a year for them to soften up. So it's just the fantasies we get of what we want, and then we get it. And just, usually doesn't fulfill the fantasy. So that, particularly on Tudong, where they say, again, the simplicity, it really shines a light on that, and it really helps one to see it. And it's in our day-to-day life, it's so important to investigate that, to recognize that. Because it's so easy just to go on to the next thing. Oh, that didn't satisfy, so I must have did it wrong. But then there's this, which I can get my satisfaction from. So that we keep going. But it's important to be able to to slow down and shine a light on that tendency. And to just to be able to be present with it, and to hold it lightly, and to And being able to laugh at oneself, to not take oneself too seriously. You know, the desires that we get swept up in that seem so necessary and solid and real, or the kind of things we can get irritated and offended by, and you look at it from another perspective and say, what was the big deal? Why did I bother? But you know, it just is. You have to go through it. You know, as human beings, that's really the only way we learn, to be able to be patient with that, and to not take oneself too seriously. There's an idiom that a monk, or the monk that I told you about, who just recently died this year, who was very respected, Ajahn Mahabua. He, the forest tradition disciple of Ajahn Man. There's a million people at the day of his cremation. And he had an idiom that he'd use over and over again. And he said, so you fall down, you get up, you crawl along. And that's practice. And it's just being, accepting and patient with that, with the fact that that's oftentimes how practice feels like. Yeah, we fall down, you got to get up. And sometimes it just feels like you're crawling along. But that's okay. That's the way practice is. The ways of the things that we learn, of the examples of the Tudong monks, of just just being patient. I remember asking Ajahn Chah one time. He had a period of time in his practice where he just had this tremendous difficulty with lust, and just raw sexual desire. And he's been a monk for many years, and there it is right in his face. And I remember him talking about it, and just sort of the difficulties he had, and this constant vision. When they were in the early days, there was a monk who was preparing his biography in Thai. And this is when Ajahn Chah was probably, before he was 60 years old, there was one of the senior Thai monks was pulled together a short biography. And Ajahn Chah was talking about this, and the monk was sort of wrote it all down. And he came to Ajahn Chah after. He said, "We can't put this in a book." and Ajahn Chah sort of said, "Yeah, if you don't put that in the book, don't bother printing it." Because it's sort of, this is as human beings, we have defilements. And it isn't as if, even as a monk, it isn't like, you ordain as a monk and your defilements ordain with you. I mean, it's just what happens. And you're born as a human being. Yeah, you bring the whole package. But that's the whole point of, that's why we practice. That's why we do this practice. It's because of the kind of habits and defilements that we have, the attachments that we have. I asked Ajahn Chah one time, know, sitting with them and said, you've related this period of time when you had this tremendous difficulty with sexual lust, and what technique or what method did you use to really get through it? And he sort of just chuckled and said, there was no technique. So it's just patience and keep reminding myself that this has got to be impermanent. and that was enough. It's not flashy, it's not but it's actually it's real. It's kind of the nitty-gritty of a practice, and just being willing to be patient. And patience is not just kind of acquiescing to something and giving up, but it's just being willing to be present with something, being willing to be present with difficulty. But also, I mean, even if something is really pleasant and just what you always wanted, you still have to be patient, and because the tendency is to hook right into it. But that sense of patience and just being willing to be present, not getting, hooked into the excitement of either, the elation of getting what one wants, or the depression of coming up against some difficulty, and just that quality of patience. And that's, I think, one of the things of as an example of the the forest practice, Tudong practice is really learning that kind of quality of patience. There's a certain lightness of how one holds things, and a patient acceptance with what's present, but being there for it. And Ajahn Chah he exemplified it, and he taught it. And just in the way the image of the Tudong monk, the romantic image of carrying your umbrella and the mosquito net and your bowl and just these simple requisites. The reality is, it doesn't matter how light it is, walking anywhere is tiring. It's the same as if you you put a pack on and you go out to Yosemite. And it's beautiful, everything is gorgeous, and this pack is it's heavy. you just have to be patient, and learning how to be present. Aspect of putting effort into things, being able to bring, because usually we rely on some kind of stimulation, some kind of or hope of gratification for us to put forth effort, some goal or some something going our way. It's like they just the conditions are comfortable, are everything is the temperature is pleasant, the conditions are nice, everything's right, and then you can put forth effort. The ethos of that kind of that Tudong ethos is really, we have to learn how to put forth effort. It's like Ajahn Chah would say, you've got, you're inspired and you put forth effort. You're depressed and fed up and you put forth effort. You're sort of rested and you put forth effort. You're tired and you put forth effort. You see there, these are just you're training yourself to lift the mind towards and the effort isn't something heroic or extreme in any way, but it's just a willingness to put that attention forward, a willingness to lift up attention. Because you see, you know, something is a bit difficult and we sink. But so the effort is just that lifting up of the mind, just a brightening of the mind, moving it towards an object of attention. And that is the effort. And also, it's interesting in the Eightfold Path, when the Buddha defines right effort, it's always in terms of it's not about the activity, but it's about the state of the mind. So the effort that we put forward to protect the mind from unwholesome mental states that have arisen is right effort, or the effort that we do to relinquish unwholesome mental states is right effort, or the effort to maintain wholesome mental states that have arisen already is right effort, or the effort to bring into being sort of fresh wholesome mental states is right effort. So those are, it's all around the quality of the mind is what effort is. It's not, because sometimes we can think in terms of, you know, I've got to do this, or I've got to be extraordinarily diligent. But it's the turning of the turning of the mind, or lifting of the mind to something that is wholesome and skillful and bright. And that is that's the effort. My own experience and I didn't have extensive experience as a Tudong monk. I had a curious, so my training ended up being Ajahn Chah. I was living out in it was after my 8th year as a monk, which is still pretty young as a monk, and I was living out in a big forest, a branch monastery of Ajahn Chah's, a big forest out on the near the Laotian border. And really liking it there, loved the solitude and the quality of the forest. And then Ajahn Chah sent word to come back to Wat Nanachat and prepare to take over being the abbot of Wat Nanachat, which is the monastery for the international monks that's a branch of Ajahn Chah's. So then I went back there. Ajahn Chah asked me to do it, so I did it. Then he went and got sick, and there was nobody to tell me not to do it. I was stuck there. I ended up 15 years as the abbot there. And then I came to America. So that I took the opportunity to do and. Like the whole of my sixth year, seventh, times of that, I spent time wandering. I tended to seek places of solitude and just maybe not walk for too long, a few days, and then just stay for a month, 6 weeks in one place, and just find a nice place that I liked, and then just stay and practice. So that's one way of using that Tudong experience. And I spent most of my time in the along the border of Burma, and I had a variety of experiences that were sometimes like dealing with illness. I've had a variety of illnesses. Illnesses, accidents, fractures, dislocations, operations, to the point that when Ajahn Amaro and I were discussing me coming to America to sort of share the establishing of a new monastery here, his only his main request for me was, you know, you've really got to make a firm resolution not to get sick. Says America just doesn't have a healthcare system. You can't go to America and get sick or have to be patched up in a hospital. So I've been doing pretty good actually. But when I was out in living in the forest, then you know, things happen, and you don't have resources. You just have to deal with it. You have to be patient. And then wait for circumstances to change or sort of come your way, so that it finally you might be able to get some treatment. And I remember one time I got an infection in my foot, and my foot was really swollen, and it was in an area where it was north. It was actually a long and old section of the where the Japanese had built a railway in the Second World War between Thailand and Japan and Burma, and all the tracks had been ripped up after the war, and then there was just an old trail. It wasn't really a road, but it was open enough that it was kept as a, so it was a few days walk away from any town, and I couldn't walk anymore. It was just this, and the villagers were very concerned. They wanted to help me, and so their first was, of course, in Thailand. They love antibiotics, and so they brought penicillin and the village needle to give me the shot. So I declined. And then they village village doctor came and did herbal medicines, put a poultice on, and that was way more effective than anything. It just really pulled all the kind of poison pus into one place and then kind of burst. But it was in the bottom of my foot, so it was, I couldn't. So I had this big hole in the bottom of my foot, and then a bunch of Thai men in a truck, like a hunting, it was like an army truck kitted out with gun racks and spotlights. There was hunters who were out there, but the villagers sort of flagged them down. They were out hunting, so they actually said, "Okay, we'll take that monk back." And it broke their heart to not be hunting. So they said, it was nighttime, so they were started showing signs. I said, "You got a monk with you. You shouldn't be doing that." And they said, "Yeah, we know." I said, "I'm going to make a resolution not." I'm going to be spreading loving kindness, and we're not going to see any animals. You may as well just put your guns down. So I did that, and sure enough, we didn't. There wasn't any animal showed up, which was again, it was a great teaching to them. Good. So then, you know, even if you get, you know, there's some sickness, some difficulty, you know, something happens, you wait, you're patient, you look after yourself, and there's these kind of opportunities arise, occasions arise where people can bring benefit, and you can benefit from things. One time when I was in during that range retreat, I lost the vision in my eye, and You know, couldn't see out of my eye anymore. And I said, okay, this is a problem. You know, I waited, okay, what do I do? Yeah, just be patient. I tried, I mean, there was some, you know, just got, like some drops. I tried, I remember thinking, oh, sometimes they use honey for healing. And I thought, that's good for healing. So I put honey in my eye. Just so maybe it'll be good for it. I didn't do anything. I should have put it in my mouth. But it was worth a shot. You know? just waiting and waiting. I said, oh, okay. And then just, okay. And you see, you know, the mind, it goes to, oh, it's my eye, what am I going to do? But I made this, you know, I don't want to be going anywhere. I put all this effort into getting into a quiet place for practice. So that, you know, your mind is torn. And how do you deal with that? And what do you do with it? You know, it's part of the practice. Finally, it was sort of, okay, I should really try to find a doctor. And in so I told the villagers in the mine site, and I said, okay, next vehicle that comes in, we'll get them and take you out. And there was another week before any kind of vehicle showed up. So it was having to be patient with that, having to just, okay, be present. Well, this is what it is. And, in the end, it was some weird virus infection in the iris of the eye. Like, how do these things exist? Then it came back several times in the following year. But at least I knew what to do with it then. When you're out in the jungles, out in the wilderness, you just don't know what's going to happen. And of course, the reality is, you know, even if we are living in a major city like San Francisco, nobody really knows what's going to happen. We live under the illusion of everything is neat and tidy, and it's just the way it's really going to be. And it's really not that way. And it's helpful to remind ourselves, not to create suffering or unnecessary suffering or difficulty, but just as a recollection that, it's not always the way that we think it's going to be. And that gives us an edge to reflect on. Well, if it's not the way we think it is, what habit comes up in the mind? What sort of voice? What's the first voice that sort of shoots its hand up? And what about me? We have to learn about all these, all the voices that our mind sort of it cranks out, and as we listen to them, understand them, reflect on them, work with them. Those voices, they settle. They're understood. They have a place of resolution and clarity. And of course, it all comes back to just that simple quality of mindfulness. And from the mindfulness, then the different qualities of practice that we need to rely on are cultivated. The quality of faith or of confidence, it comes out of the mindfulness. The quality of effort, the mindfulness is the ground, and then the effort, the application of energy sort of rises up out of that mindfulness. The concentration, stillness, tranquility, the base and the foundation is the mindfulness, being the knowing. It's that's your It's always the foundation, and then the mind is able to become still, become settled, become steady. Like one of the when we hear about, say, samadhi, concentration, we can oftentimes think of it, you know, in terms of, you know, something, you know, that we're forcing, or you know, concentration is kind of a tight holding. And one of the when in the Thai language, when they translate samadhi, they don't just use one word. It's the phrase that they use is the firm establishing of the mind, which is much more applicable, much more useful way to hold it. Just establishing the mind firmly, so that, and of course the mindfulness is the ground, is the root, and with that firm establishing of the mind, that we can allow it to steady, allow it to settle. Then the quality of wisdom, of discernment, it arises up out of that quality of mindfulness, of knowing. There's an idiom that Ajahn Chah would use over and over again in the Thai language, and it's rare that he would just use the word for in the scriptural language for wisdom or discernment is banya, and it's rare that Ajahn Chah would use that on its own, but he would always more often than not. He would use satipanya, which is like mindfulness and wisdom together, and that's a more, I think, a helpful way of seeing, yeah, this aspect of discernment, investigation, understanding, wisdom relies on the mindfulness, the awareness, that attention, that sati. That quality of mindfulness, being the knowing, is kind of the ground, the root that we, these different qualities in practice that we rely on, that they grow up out of, and you know, our practice and our training, and it relies on you know, being present to the circumstances that we're in, and the turning attention to these wholesome qualities. That's the faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom. Yeah. And these are what are called spiritual faculties or spiritual powers. Yeah. I mean, they're also kind of supported and grounded in as the qualities of generosity, of virtue, of resolution, of equanimity, of loving kindness, determination, all of those what are called the paramitas, the wholesome qualities, spiritual qualities. So that is as we go through our day, go through our life, it isn't just sort of some idealized Tudong monk off in the wilderness of Thailand that has the opportunity to cultivate. It's all of us, whether we're monastics living up in Mendocino County or the lay people living anywhere, here in Marin in the city. Those qualities are what we direct our attention to and give ourselves the encouragement to rely on. And that's what nurtures our practice. So offer that. For reflection, maybe we can end with a short sit. If anybody's feeling a bit, been sitting a bit too long, just to feel free to stand up or do a bit of a stretch and then just come back and sit with us.